Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host as ever, Louis McCaffrey, and this week I am joined by Christopher Somani.
Hi, Louis.
Hi, Chris. I'm also joined by Christian Wolfe.
Hello, Louis. Good to be back.
Good to, well, kind of, Christian. We'll see how it pans out. And is that a lot of hair under that hat that I'm seeing?
Mate, it is quite a lot of hair under that hat.
It's a very hairy shirt, Dugan. How are you, shirt?
I'm all right, mate. I'm overdue for the old haircut. I never really see how everyone's like, we're back to the pubs, we're back to real life, off we go. I was like, I'll get around to it. I'll get back to it in a bit. I'll get back to the old going and doing stuff when you can just go and do it and don't have to book it like weeks in advance, you know?
Very much Celtic's approach to winning Glasgow derbies.
The whole season, basically. They were like, we'll get around to it.
We'll get around
to
it.
And then they don't, so fuck them.
Yep. So, Manny, we'll start with you. Obviously, you were missing from the reaction, which turned out to be a great, great shame. would you like to tell us your thoughts and feelings after that 4-1 game?
To be honest, I didn't really expect any different. I think I got a bit sick of kidding myself on, and I'm sure I'm not alone. And we certainly kidded ourselves on before the Scottish Cup tie. We did the live preview, which was good fun. Then we went out and we put in that display against them in the Scottish Cup. This time, the display was even worse, but I think I had kind of already made peace with the fact it would be, well, you know, you make peace till it happens and then you go absolutely mental as usual. But there is nothing that should have suggested any different could or would have happened in that game. See, the idea that guys who've been, you know, completely struggling for form, confidence, slash wanting to leave, you know, there's a number of reasons why they could have performed so badly this season. I don't know. But the idea that because it's against Rangers that they were going to, at this late stage in this juncture, turn in a performance was absolutely stupid. I'm just glad it wasn't worse than it was in terms of a real proper thumping. In my head, 5 goals is required for a proper thrashing. So 4-1 was just under that. And that's it. 2 more games and this season is done. Frankly, it cannot get worse. In fact, I shouldn't say that. We could lose the next 2 games heavily. But anyway, I'll stop talking now.
Stu, how are you feeling? And could you also give us an update on your thoughts on Moy Elyounoussi, just out of pure curiosity?
Well, we'll come to him because I think there was a couple of moments during that game that typified perhaps the attitude of where the club's at, where the team's at. And yeah, similar to Somani, I had very low expectations going into the game. Maybe from, you know, what we've seen for so long, for so consistent week on week, and particularly the performances against them, but also as a little bit of a safety net that you don't want to build yourself up just to be disappointed. And so I went into that game about as unbothered by a Glasgow derby as I've been in years and years and years. And I was still dumbfounded that Celtic found a different way to supersede those expectations to be even worse and even more pathetic than they have been all season. And I was furious about it, and I didn't turn it off, but it was physically painful to watch how poor they were, making that Rangers team look like the fucking Harlem Globetrotters. It was embarrassing. And do you know who bears the brunt of it? It's the fans, because maybe they are working away at the club. I hope they're working away at the club. The players don't care. The players are like unfazed by it. They've checked out. There's only a few that will wear it and they'll get away with it essentially because they'll be leaving the club. I had a conversation with a few people we've talked about the impact of the fans being in there. Those players have been spared an almighty humiliation, the sorts that we used to dole out every single time they would come to us. If you saw the clip circulating from the 5-0 game with Morelos getting cheered on by the Celtic fans, if you think of the dog's abuse Andy Halliday used to get, it was fucking class, and that's what they all would have got, and it's what they all deserve. And I'm actually quietly disappointed that they didn't get it. Can you imagine what Scott Brown would have faced getting hooked at 60 minutes after putting in that performance? Fuck me, it's really bad.
Christian, you know, a lot of the time, most of the time, you're the stats guru. You focus on the numbers, focus on the tactics. how are you feeling emotionally? If you take away all that kind of all the hard data, how do you actually feel after watching the Celtic team recently?
Yeah, I don't think anybody is having fun. I don't think anybody has had fun for a long time when it comes to watching Celtic. I think after the cup game, I kind of checked out emotionally as well. I think because that was the last possible glimmer in the season. Okay, you could have talked about maybe taking Rangers' unbeaten season away, but that was the real last thing. I think after that, as I said, people react differently, and people, you know, kind of bear, you know, to take these things in a different ways. And for me, I kind of just checked out after that. So, you know, the Aberdeen game, I was like, okay, that's fine. Sunday was a tough watch. Another frustrating watch, because with it in, and there's a lot of issues on the pitch, and I'm sure we're going to go through them, but it's also the fact that Celtic, when they do create chances, and they do create a fair bit of chances, they just can't take them and haven't taken them for a long while. So this season was finished a long time ago. I probably checked out emotionally after the cup game, but everybody's just waiting for this season to be over, and then nobody, absolutely nobody, is having any fun when it comes to the Celtic men's team, at least.
I think, there's a couple of things that I want to come to, and one of them is the kind of standards and where we're at in terms of what we demand or what we expect as fans and what the club are doing. But I mean, it's difficult to just focus on this game in isolation. Obviously, we will a wee bit, but I think when we're talking about players, we're talking about the team, we're talking about the club, really we're talking about it over the whole season, because that really was the last game. And I think we kind of do have a chance to really look back. And if we do look back, this club, this management team, this group of players chucked it ages ago. Like, they all chucked it. And really, as Samani said, we were kidding ourselves on. We've all said it. We all had a bit of a kind of realisation after that cup game. We've been kidding ourselves on, thinking it was going to get any better. And I don't get me wrong, I think it's hard sometimes when you look at it and you think, right, you know, and on the reaction, for example, I was told within, you know, 5-10 minutes of the final whistle, I couldn't say that anybody was shite, right? And it's very difficult to, straight after a game like that, no matter what point of the season it is, no matter what's happened, to see your team get beat 4-1 and you have to be a wee bit more eloquent than that was shite, because all I could think of was, what the fuck was that? Like, all of them together again have just totally let me down. And I'm sick of getting let down constantly by this team, this club. Stu?
What I was going to say, just when you're talking about that they checked out a long time ago, there were obviously a number of issues with how the team has been set up, how they're playing, the personnel that we have available to us, the state of the squad, etc. Some of those problems have been there for a long, long time. Some of them are issues that we're just sort of stuck with as a circumstance of the season now. And we're talking about chucking it. The club chucked it. If you think about it, in January, allowing Frimpong and El Hamed to go, bringing in a body to play at right back, which is all John Joe Kenny is, a body with like no ambition, no attempt to try and salvage the season, no effort to really do anything, just basically down tools. Dubai was really the absolute death nail for that. Again, brought on by ourselves. The club had umpteen chances to intervene with the management team throughout the course of the season, didn't, stagnated, to where this attitude and this approach and is now just symptomatic of the whole season and the team. And as you rightly say, how can you expect him to suddenly turn around and put in a performance just because you're playing against Rangers? But there's so many points throughout the season where you can see at various stages where things have been checked out, allowing the squad to fall into that sort of state of disrepair, not bringing in anyone to, for example, play as a winger, you know, at any point in January, even as a loan signing to try and bolster those options, knowing where Forrest was with his fitness, not offering any sort of serviceable alternative to Frimpong, not offering any extra support at centre-half, given the season that Duffy had and the injuries Julian was facing. It's just like down tools. And I was going to say that you can almost understand where the players are, but I think they take an enormous amount of blame. I really do. I think with how they've applied themselves, just from a professional level, because that team was beaten in the tunnel on Sunday. And you can look at, it did come up, I think, on the reaction about how St Johnstone can go and play against them and really give Rangers a game. And I don't want to sound like a pure Roy Keane, like old-fashioned, hard, like it's all about desire, but it is about a desire to compete, and those players don't have it at all. They just wanted to get through the game, and I thought that was really evident.
The thing that's clear is, for me, there isn't a single player who's performed to the... there's some players who've performed better than others, but there isn't a single player who's got anywhere near their ceiling, even close to it. You know, there are some players, it's a mixture of players who you know can perform better and should be performing better, but in key positions there's players that are just simply not good enough for Celtic, and that changed from last season, and that's a big, big problem. The goalkeeper for me is a huge, huge miss. Forster, if you put Bain in goals for us last season, we wouldn't have won the league. Simply put, Forster had so many big, big performances for us. He probably bred confidence in the defence as well, because they're thinking, I can maybe make a mistake here. I can maybe get away with some mistakes that I wouldn't normally get away with because he's behind them. Case in point, I'm not even going to talk about any of the goals, but seeing the Scottish Cup tie, Bain is in goals for the overhead kick. Was it Steve Davis? It wasn't even a good overhead kick, right? It went over his shoulder. It was shoulder height, right? That's the sort of thing Forster would have made the save. You know, he would have had to have reacted quick. He would have knocked it away. It wouldn't have been a goal. And that would have G'd the team up. With Scott Bain, I'm sorry, it's, you know, you could put a traffic cone in there. You know, we're talking about the three goalkeepers we've had this season. Barkas not making a save of note. Scott Bain is every bit as bad. So what I think, when you've got really key players like that have regressed from last season, that kind of starts to go through the squad as well. And the defence then are far more nervous than they would have been last season, because they've essentially got the greatest goalkeeper I've ever seen at Celtic standing behind them. So these things feed into each other. And I think what we're seeing is not only a team whose performances are poor, but confidence is rock bottom. Christian mentioned the chances we're missing. I think the main reason that the players are missing these chances is they're scared to miss them. And when you're scared to miss chances, you do. And that's played out for a large part of this season.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that, Louis. I think what you... When I said nobody's having fun, I don't think... It's pretty clear the players are not in a good place, and they're not having fun there either. What struck me there the last couple of days, been thinking about how this season ended up where it is. And you can almost strip it all back and you go and look at the 11 players who played the most minutes last season, and have 11 players who played the most minutes this season. So you have the players who's been in both seasons, Frimpong, Ayer, Brown, McGregor, Christie, and Edward. So those who played both seasons, as Armani says there, who of them had a better season this season than the last? It's probably nobody. You can make a case maybe for Christopher Ayer, but none of them have kind of developed and had a better season. Now you come to the crux of it. Like Samarani said, look at the players you've changed. You've changed Fraser Foster for Scott Bain / Vasily Barkas. You've changed pretty much Christopher Julien for Shane Duffy / Stephen Welsh. So just by that, you have two clear downgrades in goalkeepers and centre-back. And then you have a Scott Brown that has fallen off massively. So that's your defensive core there, shot to pieces. You've got other players that have changed, like Bolingoli, Greg Taylor, Laxalt, Oliver Charm has been placed by David Turnbull. James Forrest has played a lot less. But basically, you know, the manager's the same. The players, through bad choices and then replacing the ones who've gone or injured, or basically a dip of form, has got less as well. And I think what's happening is, when you had this Neil Lennon as a manager at the start of the season, he's so much about the players. He's not that much about the system or the organizations or the tactics. You know, this is a manager who kind of likes to tell the players some guidelines, but go out and figure it out on the pitch yourself. So when the quality of the players on the pitch drop, be it the players who are not so good, or you have a massive drop off in form like Scott Brown, you don't have the support of a system to fall back on. and you're less likely to find a tactical solution when the player problem arises. So I think that's the trajectory you kind of get with Neil Lennon teams, but is a manager who relied on the individual quality, and when that quality of players dropped due to wrong choices, team gets worse, it's very difficult to fix it. And then, as you say there, you have the snowball effect and nothing is going right. You know, you can go back to Dubai, and as Stu mentioned there, in terms of letting Frimpong, Elhamid go in the general transfer, even Oliver Charm, who's hadn't had a great season by any means by then, but he was still a key player last year. So, and then you come to kind of the Kennedy tenure, and you know, I'd be happy, you know, we can sit here and okay, what do we think Kennedy has done? We can look at the stats and so on.
But
really, Louis, it's just they're all dead rubbish, and everybody's in a really, really bad place. On the go, sorry.
You know, we've heard that Kennedy has improved things, that he's changed things. What has he changed? What has he improved?
For me, I think it's three main things. I think the team at least tried to be more patient and have a bit more of an organized build-up from the back. I think they generally have had more, what I call it, penetration in the final third. So they're kind of available to kind of convert the possession they have up into more chances. And between those first two, if you do them, that then again helps with sustaining attacks. So you're not going forward so quickly that when you lose, you're wide open. And I think they're pressing, especially high up the pitch, have been better. The issues, and then John Kennedy's main issue is, and maybe it's from what Sir Marnie says to as well in terms of their confidence, they haven't managed to, what I think are improvements in terms of the play, manage to convert that into results. And then you get one bad result after another, you know, the Rangers games, Aberdeen games and so on, and you kind of get into that spiral. So there's still issues there still. Louis, I'm not going to sit here and say this team has been desperately unlucky, because there's a lot of individual mistakes there. There's a lot of the finishing, especially, has been really poor. You know, there's still issues with the set pieces. Still centrally in the midfield, there's still big defensive issues around Scott Brown especially and Callum McGregor. But yeah, I that's what I would say from that point. But and again, it's kind of elementary, because all of Kennedy's games, really apart from, you know, maybe the first couple of ones and the cup game, are dead rubbers. And he is trying to fix something that has been a decline in the making, not only since Neil Lennon came in. I think it goes further back to that. I think it probably goes back to the summer 2018, when this team slowly started to decline in this season. It has fallen off a cliff. I think particularly because of the choices that were made in replacing players and not replacing players in sense of Scott Brown, and then essentially, you know, players whose form hasn't been good enough.
I mean, Stu, I don't know what your thoughts are on Kennedy, but I get what Christian's saying there about, you know, you can see that they're trying to play out from the back when they didn't before, and they maybe are a wee bit more patient going forward and try to create chances. I would accept that, but I don't think it's made a blind bit of difference. I don't think it's actually he's made some changes, but they have not contributed to winning any of the big matches, any matches that he really had to win in order to show us that he had something else. And really, when you look at it, John Kennedy was meant to be, you know, the complete opposite of someone like Neil Lennon. He was meant to be tactically astute. He was meant to be organised. He was meant to be someone that the players liked and got on with. And yet, really, John Kennedy has really had no real material effect on that team.
Yeah, I have a modicum of sympathy for Kennedy in the sense that I think that what Christian said is absolutely spot on as to offer an explanation to the decline. And I think that John Kennedy has come in and essentially inherited a team that is just absolutely fundamentally broken from a spirit, from a confidence perspective, completely broken, and that there is very little that you can do to turn that around. I also think that just on what Christian had said, that John Kennedy could have got better results if you gave John Kennedy the opportunity to have a real proper go at it when there is still things to play for, when you can still inspire players that they can turn it around and that they can go and win something instead of just playing dead rubber after dead rubber. And I think that the blame ultimately falls at the custodians of the club for that, for their lack of intervention regarding the managerial situation. And in fact, their lack of intervention at any point in this season, and even after Neil Lennon's gone, where there hasn't really been any public intervention in terms of something to give the fans a little bit of hope or something to cling to through what has been a very desperate season, especially when they've essentially just taken advantage of them with season tickets, etc. So I have a sympathy for John Kennedy, but as you say, there have been differences, but it's not translating into results, and that's what we need to see as fans. That's what we needed to see when he started kind of his tenure. And I think there's obviously, for all that he's tactically astute and has a good relationship with the players, he was still obviously fundamental to what was happening throughout Lennon's tenure. And also he's obviously inexperienced and naive, and you can see that in some of his decision-making, some of his substitutions. The Mikey Johnson for Odson Edwards substitution on Sunday is just utterly bizarre, like absolutely bizarre. And there's been other examples like that throughout his few games. But
even Somani, before you came in, but and a couple of things, like see picking Scott Brown. He's continually picked Scott Brown, even though we all know and he knows that that guy cannot perform. And yet Kennedy still picks him. That's on Kennedy. I'm sorry, but he could have come into that team, dropped Scott Brown and put Sorrow in. And I honestly think he would have had a better chance of doing that than other people, because he's got that relationship there. And I think Scott Brown probably would have understood. But that was embarrassing for Scott Brown at the weekend. And we will come back to the weekend's game. But picking Scott Brown, having more training time in between games in the last month, 2 months, than any Celtic manager usually gets, and he still went with a two-man midfield with Scott Brown in it and couldn't come up with anything else. I mean, it's piss poor, and the standards have dropped so much that we're looking at this guy and going, he's changed things. He's made it better. No, he's not, as far as I'm concerned. Chris?
I agree, and I think that two-man midfield was him. I think his last roll of the dice was, I'm going to revert to 4-2-3-1 and let's bring back the old band from the Rodgers era. I think we set up against Livingston that way, and that there was hallmarks of Rodgers' team at their pedestrian, at their most pedestrian. I need to stress that, even though we won 6-0, it wasn't like the greatest of Rodgers' form, but I could see hallmarks in that style of football. And I think that was it. It was the last roll of the dice. This got us success for so long, and I was part of that, and we'll give that a try. Obviously, it doesn't work. Scott Brown can't play in there. We've known from late 2018-19 that they've figured that system out and that they target him because they know what he's like. So it was daft. But at the same time, it doesn't matter, because if he'd got a run at it from October, it just doesn't really matter. If he played Sorrow and Sunday or Brown, and I know it annoys you, Louis, it really doesn't matter. I don't think we would have won the game if he'd played Sorrow. And then he's that guy that's just ditched Scott Brown and all that it's going through in his head. So I think that's the problem, you know. It goes back to the recruitment in the summer, where we recruited for a 3-5-2, abandoned it when we realised that we didn't have the centre-half personnel for it, and now we've been tinkering with 4-4-2 Diamond, with 4-3-3, we eventually went back to 4-2-3-1. Basically what happened is we thought they recruited well. It turns out they recruited dreadfully. They bought players that weren't suited to the way that we play, various other things. And ever since then, we've been trying to put square pegs in round holes. You could have maybe have given Kennedy from October, and then you might have given him a few players in the window. But see, by the time it got to then, there was no point. After we get beat at Ibrox, it was just Kenny because we had to fill a gap. And nobody in this podcast gave a shit if we signed anybody else in January, because it was already done by then. So in many ways, Kennedy is just a continuation. It really doesn't matter, if you know what I mean. And I get what you mean. You know, I'm saying, why Scott Brown in the pitch? Because there's no real alternative, and that's how desperate it is just now, you know.
Lou, you might want to move on to the game as well, but I think what's the man's sister? And, you know, I said at the top of this podcast, you know, I've kind of checked out emotionally, and even since Kennedy has come in, it hardly hasn't mattered. Now, But I'm not going to sit there and say to you, Louis, like, you shouldn't be angry for range for two losses to Rangers. That's understandable. But I just haven't managed to get that angry because of it. But people reacted different ways. And I think a lot of what's happened, especially the last two, three games, I think just pure frustration, disappointment, anger that's built up throughout the whole season. And it's come out at various points in the season as well, but these are just the last horrible icings on this shit cake, really. And some people like me, maybe just kind of just emotionally detached from it. Other people just pour all the frustrations of this season into these last three games in Canada. I'm not saying any of them is, you know, one is right and one is wrong. I think this season just has to end for the sake of everybody. It just has to end.
Before you come in, I just imagine the end of the season, the camera pans to the bench and it's John Kennedy and the theme tune, the closing theme tune from Prisoner Cell Block H starts playing. That just, you know, things were different then, you know. That's just fade to black and end this shit show of a season. Sorry, poo show of a season.
I just wanted to follow on from what Sir Manny said, that essentially in slightly fewer words, it's a team without identity. It's been a team without identity for a long time when you talked about all the various different tactical incarnations they've gone for. But on Sunday, they lined up in a formation, but they were just there to play. They were just there to be there. There were bodies on a pitch, and that's all it has been for a wee while. And I wish I could detach emotionally from it. And even when I think I have detached emotionally from it, it punches you in the gut. Whether it's in a shitty tweet you see, or you just remember it, or you think about how it could have been, it's impossible to switch off from. And it's maddening as well that the club, the fans just need something. I need something to feel positive about. Mm-hmm. And there's all this talk about Eddie Howe and when Eddie Howe comes in. And don't worry, ITK, it's signed, sealed, delivered. Just tell the fans, man, just give us something. I don't give a fuck who his backroom team are right now. I just need to know that there's a manager coming in and that it's maybe going to get better. Because one of the big fears I have is that the reason that we're in this mess is because of the very same custodians of the club that are putting together this new regime, whether or not it's going to transition from Lowell to Don Mackay. Peter Lowell's very heavily involved in it. And they fucked up astronomically a number of times. And I don't know how you feel, but it's obviously in their locker to get this wrong again. And I just need some kind of anything to hang on to that, you know, you've got a proper, exciting manager who can come in and engage the players, engage the fan base as well, because I think that we're lost at the moment.
Let me just jump in, Louis. And I think it's too right now. For me, it's like an emotional attachment almost from the results now. But I think that anger will come back very, very quickly. If, again, as Stu says, this, the hierarchy bundles another chance to get something right. You know, we put all this talk about restructure, sporting directly, got the headhunters out, going to get a really good person, soil out. Maybe it's being worked on. Maybe it's just waiting to be presented. But, you know, I don't even know how to articulate it in terms of how poorly this club is run, or the kind of not a pistic, but it can be run so much better. And you just kind of go, you need a clear out. You need at least something fundamentally needs to happen with this club. Otherwise, I think this can just be something that repeats itself.
I genuinely think the more and more I think about it, I think this has been a deliberate managed decline. And to regain some parity for bullshit reasons, to be, you know, a competitive league with them again. I genuinely have started to get to that level of cynicism that I think this is
that's tinfoil hat thinking.
So mental. It's Phil Free name stuff.
But people that think that like the government could be organized enough to fucking tap your phone and microchip you and all that sort of shit, that Celtic board simply don't have the level of competence to manage a decline.
That's the only glimmer of hope I have, Stu, that actually they're not that smart.
Yeah.
Operation job offer in the shower, was that like a covert ops thing by Lowell and Desmond? It wasn't just Desmond or Lowell had sculled some champagne and got all excited. Was it like meticulously planned out? I'll come in from the left-hand side of the shower and then I'll offer them the job and I'll slide the CVs into the draw. Louis, I'll just shite. Come on.
You can't say that word. Right, I'm gonna put the ball in the tee for you, son, Manny. We're gonna start talking about the game. Cal McGregor.
Never watched it, mate. On you go.
Callum McGregor, future Celtic captain.
I mean, I've not been as big a fan of Callum McGregor as some people over the years, but I have to be fair and say Callum McGregor is in the camp of players that are just performing ridiculously poorly, as opposed to players who you know aren't good enough for Celtic going forward. That said, I thought that second challenge, and so that's roughly when I turned it off, actually. That second challenge on Sunday was an abdication of duty, if you ask me. I think the timing, the way that he went for the ball after having been booked. I mean, the first one I thought maybe he could have got away with a booking, but the fact remains he was on a booking, and to then go for the ball in the reckless manner that he did, just was like, no, you're supposed to be one of our big players. You're supposed to be stepping up in games like this. You're supposed to take the game by the scruff of the neck. And to go in as recklessly as he did at that point, to me, it was up there with Sutton handling the ball at Ibrox, if you remember back when he got sent off many moons ago. When he did that, I said the exact same as I did with Sutton. I says, you don't care if you stay in this park or not. And that was the feeling I got from it. Cal McGregor, a future Celtic captain. Well, we can't get rid of all our players next season, Louis. We can't. We're going to have to keep some of them. And I'd much prefer Cal McGregor to be the captain than Scott Brown, so I'll leave it at that.
Is anyone think that it wasn't two yellows? Like the first one's really, I suppose, the only one you could possibly debate, but for me, I thought it was a yellow card when I saw it.
The only thing that I thought, and I know my brother felt very passionately about this as well, was just from the letter of the law, if you can play an advantage and then go back and send them off. And I think that there has been a change in the rules that say that you can, but I was surprised by that. And to be honest, I was just surprised by, as Sir Manny says about Cal McGregor, and I find it, I know that there's a couple of players that we talk about that don't get it, don't get enough stick or like absolved of criticism.
We're going to come back to that show. That's a big section of the show, don't you worry.
Good. Obviously Callum McGregor does fit into that. I find it, from an emotional point, because I'm so fond of him and I think he's such a good player, I find it so hard to watch him play the way he's playing, because as Sir Manny says, I think he's an excellent player, but he's just playing at such a low level and has been all season. And I think that Callum McGregor is one of the only players that I can see from that team that looks like they're wearing it as much as some of the fans are, that he looked like, as it was all falling apart around us, you saw it particularly in the sort of post-Dubai debacle when he kept getting farmed out and pushed out in front of cameras, just like unable to explain what was happening and not quite knowing what to do about it, and like desperately hoping it wouldn't happen, but not quite, you know, just lost in it all. And I think he's just been dragged down to this horrible level. And Sunday was just lunacy. Like, I mean, it's literally 2.5 minutes between challenges and he's off. And at that point, as I said, managing expectations going into the game, I thought, this is going to be the same game we've watched time and time again. We'll probably be the better team and we probably won't win and we'll miss some chances and blah, blah, blah. They'll win by the odd goal. And at 25 minutes in, they've scored and you're down to 10 men and you're like, oh my God, we're actually going to get turned over here, like properly turned over. This is going to get so much worse than the low bar of expectation that I'd set for it.
And we'll probably come on to some of these players, but there always is a narrative there that certain players have talked to it and don't care. And if you look at Cal McGregor, like this guy, you know, nobody's in doubt that this guy cares. You know, he's been, you know, we talk about Celtic men and so on. He's been at a club his whole life, you know, and at his age, coming into 27, 28 now, he should be at his best, that his standard and performances and maybe not standing up and doing the right things when it mattered us most. So there's two ways of looking at that. You know, has he been dragged down? This whole situation has dragged down. Even someone like Callum McGregor has dragged him down to that level. Or is the question marks about his character and his ability to perform under pressure? Because Callum McGregor, I think, has never not won a league title with Celtic. This is the first time he's not won a league title. So you would, you kind of have to make him captain, you know, have to, but he has to be one of the key players for next season. I still think I'll be fine with him being a captain, but there's a big question mark around him and he has to have a lot to prove next season if he wants to be that focal point after Scott Brown, and he needs to be actually one of the best players next season and have a very good next season. I think that will tell us a lot about Callum McGregor.
The first goal, obviously, we've spoke about the build up to it. You know, I think you have to accept there was a good finish from Roof to score it. I don't know if maybe
what's going on with Kmart. Let's talk about this. What's going on with Kmart's roof? When's he getting that done? When's he getting the plants in, or when's he shaving it? Because what's happening? Is he in between?
I don't. It's a weird one, isn't it? It's like he's very clearly balding. And just not
aggressively though, it. Like, yeah, it needs to. It looks like it doesn't matter. Where do I go?
Fucking sort it out. The second goal was the Morelos one. You know,
you missed their goal.
Well, fuck. I mean,
do you want to have a discussion about Ayer, Louis? Or
aye, that's kind of what I wanted to get to. Like, the ball.
It has felt like half an hour of preamble to the main event.
No.
Okay,
let's don't you go full dial on us. Christian, the build up to the goal, it was shocking but it was just piss poor in a few players' parts. Obviously blame has been put at Scott Brown, at Christopher Ayer, at Scott Bain. Do you think that's fair in terms of blaming all those players? Did they all have a part to play in it? And then we'll get to the kind of higher bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, it's Scott Brown had one of his worst games I think I've ever seen. And that's, you know, that's good. It's tough composition for those in the season. And I think it's get completely skinned. Now, I know you and Aaron had a discussion, you know, on the WhatsApp, and those of you who don't listen to the subscription service on the reaction and, you know, the different camps of should he stand up? Is it just an instinct that he ducks? For me, you can make an argument that he should be closer to Morelos and he needs to push up and he needs to block it. I probably in Aaron's camp, you might maybe not be surprised to hear that. I think it's a lot to do with that he ducks. But I mean, it's Morelos getting off a shot in a dependency box. So if you're the closest defender, you have to try to get as close as possible. I think Scott Brown, although you can't let him go past you like that. Scott Bain is a goalkeeper a little bit like Barkas that doesn't make huge mistakes, but he doesn't make huge saves as well. I think it's just another one of those where it's not a terrible mistake, but again, it's, as we talked about, bringing him up again, Fraser Forster is the kind of goalkeeper who has the capability to make those sense, and Scott Bain just doesn't.
Stu, for you. Oh, sorry, Samari.
Stu.
Stu, I mean, Scott Brown, I think, you know, obviously it was his last game, and I think we'll maybe touch on him towards the end, so let's just skip his bit and get to the higher stuff. Now, I kind of get to a certain extent the idea that it was his reaction, right? And the whole thing became bizarre for me because, I, like, it was a it was a small thing, you know what I mean? It was a small thing that kind of got blown out of proportion, and it was something that was part of a few failings in the team at the time. The thing that frustrates me is the fact that for a shot that went into basically was on an upward trajectory towards the roof of the net, Ayer ended up without going into a challenge on all fours. Like, is it so Roy Keane, old-fashioned Celtic Da material to just expect your defender to get his body in the way of that shot?
What troubled me about it, so it goes without saying, and we'll skip past it in the way that multiple Rangers players skipped past Scott Brown all afternoon. Obviously in the build-up to that, before Morelos even gets his shot off. The Ayer thing did bother me a little bit. I do totally understand the natural reaction to flinch when a ball's hit at you like that from such a close distance. It bothers me that he kind of moves to the side a bit and doesn't, if he doesn't want to get hit in the face, that's okay. But he didn't really want, no one wants to get hit in the face with the football, but he didn't really want to get his body in the way of it either. And I wouldn't necessarily, I think that Chris Ayer's been excellent all season. I think he has been one of the few players that's really committed to the cause, stuck with it all season, essentially. So I don't think that you can accuse him of, I don't know, like not caring, certainly, or not trying hard enough. It was just a bizarre moment. And ultimately, it was one failing in a series of about three or four players failing at that exact same time. So I don't know if that's scalps on my arse on the fence, but it annoyed me, but I can understand a bit. So there you go.
So, man,
it wasn't the thing I was annoyed about most, put it that way, and we'll come to that.
Well, I mean, I'm an old school style centre half. I would have taken the ball right in the coom, right? But not everybody's me. I don't see the natural reaction stuff. I'm not convinced by that. But what I think the crux of the matter here is, and Christian said it at the start, and I believe it was mentioned on the reaction, is he should have been closer to Morelos and then it would have hit him and it wouldn't have been a problem. That's the real issue here. Scott Bain, I have to pull Christian up on saying that he's not a keeper that makes a lot of mistakes. He makes plenty of mistakes. And he's also just... He's a nothing goalkeeper. We got, not only could we not entice Forster back, we also get rid of a goalkeeper who made mistakes but was a tremendous shot stopper in Craig Gordon. Nobody in this call, geez, oh, it sounds like it's Clyde. Shit. nobody on this podcast would say that they would have preferred to have Bain in goals than Gordon, and we freely gave him away to Hearts. And I think that sums up the problem. That I made earlier on about how far we've regressed, you know. So that goal, I didn't see it live. I've managed to find it on Twitter or something like that, and I've seen it. And my initial reaction for Ayer was he wasn't close enough, and that Bain is, you know, you could put anybody in goal. I just think he's far below the level we need.
I mean, I think Craig Gordon is a good example. And what I was trying to say, Samarne, is that Craig Gordon had some incredible howlers in him, you know, just... Yeah. Defy belief, but I think your description of Bain as a nothing, it's I think it's correct, because it doesn't do those Gordon mistakes often, but he then also doesn't do any saves really, you know, and you can transport that to Barkas as well. And I agree with Stuart on the Ayer as well. The optics are not good. It doesn't look good, and I don't think you can question if Christopher Ayer wants to put his body on the line as well. It's just the Derby game before this, he's finished the game with his shoulders popped out. He's played through injury before. So, but I agree the optics doesn't look good. But I also, as you kind of mentioned earlier, that was made a big thing of on the WhatsApp, on the reaction. But I think it's just, that is a sign of just this season and how everybody's emotions are just frayed after, you know, 10 months of all this, and it's just kind of things just kind of blows up, because that's what happens when you're not in a great place.
These things get said, you know what I mean?
I think it's easy to, you know, it's kind of easy to jump to the conclusion of Ayer's crumbled out the way it's a lack of commitment. And really, that's the biggest bugbear, I think, for a lot of us, is that we just feel that there's a massive lack of commitment to this season, from the very top to the squad to the management, everything. And, you know, again, it was just a stupid small point of the game that, yeah, it probably did just get blown out of proportion when feelings and emotions were running high. But I did... You know, I have focused on the negatives here, and I did skip the Celtic goal, but we did get that equaliser, and it was actually Christopher Ayer that headed the ball.
Put his body on the line, I think you'd say, you know.
Absolutely. He, for once, he didn't shite it for the round thing. And he headed it across to Eddie to score. So, you know, well, I want to come back to kind of Eddie in a moment. If we may,
Stu looks as if he's got some hot takes on
Eddie.
I want
to talk about my least favourite moment of the game, because that'll stimulate a little bit of debate.
Go on, Stu.
Now, gents, I know that you know that I'm a sportsman. I'm all for fair play, and I'm all for, you know, shaking hands before and after a game. And I know that this rivalry means a lot to us, and it can't always be piss and
vinegar.
But fucking hell, 70 minutes into a game when you're getting absolutely turned over by your nearest rivals in a season when you've been turned over, the last thing I ever want to see from any Celtic player is them sitting laughing and having a joke with a Rangers player as they try and get up. And that sounds so fucking petty and so small-minded, especially because it's about Moya Elyounoussi, and we all know what my accurate opinion is about Moya Elyounoussi. It boiled my blood, because see, these things happen in football and it's just a silly little moment and you go, ah, yeah, whatever, no worries. See, even if there's a player that like you've tangled with and whatever, and you go down and you're like, right, up we get. I still want to see Elyounoussi like, I can't believe like the play's broken down here. Like just annoyed, just constantly annoyed at the situation that they're so far out of this game, especially when he's missed big chances and he's had it. And that, to me, is more indicative of someone that's not in and up for it than Christopher Ayer shying away from a ball from close proximity. That to me is an attitude of like, whatever happens, it's only a game, and it's maybe only a game for them, but it's not only a game for us, and it's us that have to wear it. We've had to wear it all season. You have to wear it when you go into work, when you get bammed up by pals, whatever, when you see flags, when you hear fireworks. I hope he's fucking smiling when he hears all that, because I'm not, and I was furious, and that's petty, and I know that's petty, and I'm sorry for that, but I just had to air that out.
Christian's currently looking downwards at a laminated card that says player criticised. Is he Norwegian? Arrow yes, defend. Arrow no, agree with Stu. I'm going to defer to Christian on this one before I give my opinion.
What are you going to say? I mean, Stu has his opinion there. Again, I'll agree with Stu. I mean, the optics aren't great when you what 3-1 down at, you know, in the derby and the end of such a long season. But to be honest, I don't know if I have energy to discuss it, because I think it is absolutely a nothing thing. And yeah. I think it's another thing where it's, you put all these feelings and all the projections of the season onto that, and I could have picked 10 other things from what we're discussing in the WhatsApp and all the thing that it doesn't really matter. And if it still feels like that about it,
mate, you sound like Moya Elyounoussi. It doesn't really matter. Fuck it.
We're not that far away, but
build his mobile out of this pocket and get a wee selfie with him.
Okay. I can't believe what he said about you, Moya. I'm not going to sit here and say Stu's terribly wrong to have those opinions. He has them. I don't share them. I don't know what was said there. You know, I don't think it's indicative of Moy, how he feels, the place he's in, how much he cares, how much effort he's put in through the season. He's put in a hell of a shift this season. He's scored the second most goals. He's, you know, in terms of creating chances, in terms of assists, in terms of being one of the absolute players, probably the second best player for Celtic this season, and he still gets a lot of shit from a lot of places from it. And from what I know about him, he's an incredible professional. He's always tried to do what's right. He's you know, a really humble and really hardworking guy. And then Celtic is would have been in a much poorer place this season if he hadn't been there. So, but I'm not going to tell Stu he's wrong to have those opinions. That's fine. But for me, over this last seven, eight weeks, I think a lot of us just need something to project upon and needs project this whole shit show of a season onto something. So, but you know, Stu and I will disagree about that, but that's fine.
We're gonna move on from the game itself specifically. Obviously, the third goal.
I wanted to hear what Sir Manny had to say.
Oh, sorry, you got a wee point now. You want to make, Chris?
Moyel Younoussi is nothing but a disgrace. No,
Jockstein is raging.
He is. How am I doing? How am I doing, boss? Shite. That's what he said.
Stop having a laugh and score.
I mean, it doesn't look good, and it reminds me of that time when Pedro was hugging Brendan Rodgers when we scudded them 5-0 or something like that. But it's magnified because of how shite we are. You know, it's not good. I would probably have said afterwards, don't do that again. but that's pretty much it. El Younoussi, for me, I think he's missed two huge chances against Rangers this season, which has not endeared them to the Celtic support. But, you know, he has had other moments for us, and yeah, I'm not going to speculate. That's probably for the end of season bonanza when we talk about players we might want to keep or not. But I wouldn't be hugely upset if he came back to Celtic or whatever. But for me, it didn't look good. Don't do it again, Moy. But I think we're just predicting how bad we feel about the performance.
I do acknowledge all those things. I did acknowledge it was petty. I do acknowledge that he's a good player, and obviously I've aired out my opinions on him before, but I did feel like I had to get that off my chest because I was livid.
It's good to talk.
See, when it comes to, you know, I wanted to touch on, and it was mentioned earlier on, criticising the players, right? And I get, obviously, emotions run high immediately after, especially games like this, getting beat 4-1 off of them. But if we move away from this game and just talk about players over the course of the season, obviously we had a bit of a debate, if you can call it a debate, we had a bit of a debate on the reaction about, you know, certain players. And me and Aaron, again, have had a thing about Odson Edouard this season. Now, I'm in no way saying that Odson Edouard has been terrible for us or anything like that this season. I fully accept the fact that he's the top goal scorer, which is great. He's not, I don't think, I did have a look earlier, I think he's maybe got 16 goals in the league this season. So he's not managed to get past the 20 mark. Now, considering the player that he is, the ability that he's got, the fact that not so long ago people were comparing him to Henrik Larsson, that he could go to the very top, that he could be sold for a record amount of money, I think this season has been poor for Odson Edouard by his standards, by his own standards. But the thing that gets me angry and frustrated is the fact that there seems to be a thing about, you can't call Eddie lazy. You're not allowed to call Edouard lazy. You can call other players lazy, but not Edouard. Now, I get that Eddie has a particular style of play. He's not Henrik Larsson. He's not, or I should have said John Hartson there. He's not Chris Sutton. He's not a smashing, you know, a striker that's going to go up, hold the line, smash into people, make himself a brute. He's going to float into spaces. He's going to have nice touches. We all know how he plays, and different strikers have different jobs to do. I totally get that. But for me, that player has played completely within himself all season, and I don't think he's wanted to be there, and I think that's reflected in his performances. But there is something, and it happened with Ncham as well, you weren't allowed to call Ncham lazy, and I don't get that. There is something under that I just don't understand. See the better players, and this is the main crux of my point. the better players in the team, the likes of your Christopher Ayers, the likes of your Odson Edwards, I don't know, maybe I'm completely wrong in this and I'd love to hear what you guys think, but I expect more from them. I expect Odson Edwards to go out and win games for us because he's got the talent. He's the main man in terms of the main attacking outlet that we've got. So I look to him and yeah, I probably am more critical of him when he doesn't do these things because the expectation is there for him. I don't have the expectation of somebody like Stephen Welsh. He's at the opposite end of the pitch and he's not as good. But Odson Edward, Moyel Younoussi, I expect these players to perform, to grab the scuff of the neck, to be the difference makers. So when they're not, and they play within themselves, and they look like they're not really that arsed, I don't get that. But it seems to be you're not allowed to say that about Odson Edward. So Manny, where do you come at it?
I think the use of word lazy to describe Edward isn't a good one. I think in terms of his performances this season, I would agree. And I think some people have defended him in terms of his goals, but Edward has never been defined solely by his goals. He's been defined by his dribbling ability and, you know, releasing balls at the right time and things like that. Edward's not done that this season for me, especially as he's dribbling. It's been so infuriating. We've seen him try and do it. At times last season, season before, the ball was like glue to his feet, but quite often he'll try and do that now and he'll turn into trouble. And there's been a few times where he's went through and goal and his passes and his, you know, decision-making hasn't been good. Yes, he has still scored goals, but Edward, as a complete package, was so much more than just a goal scorer. And although he's still chipped in with, you know, his fair share of goals for us, it's some of the other elements of his game that's been missing. I just think lazy's the wrong word to use. I just think that he's not functioned in the way as the complete player that he was and still can be. I just think some aspects of his game has dipped quite significantly, even though he still scored some goals for us. So, I don't know what you... when you're saying you can't call him lazy, I just think it's the wrong word. I just think that, again, and I go back to confidence and I go back to his overall contribution. He's put the ball in the net for us more than anybody else. However, some of the other aspects of his game, he's holding up and his link play, haven't been there.
I'm not necessarily saying that the whole problem with Eddie is that he's lazy, right? But it just seems that if you ever get even close to making that comment, you get shot down, and it's like you can't say that about him. He's not, you know. And I get it because people say, "Aye, but when he's scoring goals, you don't say that," and that's how he plays. Yeah, but see, when things are rosy, we don't complain. We don't point out these things. We don't say that we don't like this or that. Eddie, to me, a lot of the time looks flat-footed. He never looks on his toes, ready to take part, to get involved. I just want a player that's shown me everything, that's given 100%, and I don't think we've seen that from Eddie. And it's so frustrating because we know he's got it, but he's just not giving it to us. And that hurts me as a fan of the football club. I just get really irate when I see a player who I know can do so well, but he plays without himself.
So, Louis, I do have stats, but before I come to them, you touch upon it there. So Eddie has never been an energetic striker in terms of what you were saying, that, you know, taking big runs, chasing down, throwing himself about. So his style, you know, and you can measure them by, you know, the most advanced stats we have and so on, it's pretty much exactly the same. So if you want Odson Edwards to have a different style, I think that's one argument, because he's not, and I think with Samani Lacey, it's probably not the best word. And, you know, we know there's connotations with certain stereotypal descriptions of, let's be honest, black players with a certain style as well. But you can say that Odson Edwards has a, you know, has a certain style. But if you didn't call him Lacey, and if you didn't say he couldn't be bothered, and if you didn't say he chucked it last season, I don't really see a foundation of calling him more lazy, if you want to call him that, this season. I mean, it's eyes and stats, and I get that. And you had different opinions, but I had a look at his, for example, his pressing stats. They're slightly up this season. He has slightly more tackles this season. He has slightly more interceptions this season. He's have more aggressive actions as the goal. So that's those three actions within 2 seconds of the opponents getting the ball. He has exactly as many passes. He has more touches in the box this season. Now, he's gone a tiny bit down in terms of chance creation and the quality of chances he gets to. He's gone a little bit down in dribbles and shots. But for all of those, he's still in the top 3 to 5% in Europe. So for me, this is not an Eddie that's different than other seasons in terms of his effort and in his style and that he doesn't care. As Samarani says, I think it's probably a lot to do with his timing and when he releases and when he dribbles and his finishing. His finishing, if you know, really, really quickly, because I don't want to go on too much about stats. Well, I do, but I don't think everybody wants to hear too much about stats. But if you look at his first season, Eddie scores about 3 goals more than expected based on his quality of chances, XG. And the next season, he scores another 3 goals more than expected. So he's kind of overperforming. Last season, he scores about the same ratio as you expect. But this season, based on the chances he's had, he scored 6 less goals. And I don't think he's had a great season. And I think he's not in a great place either. But I don't think you can say he hasn't put an effort in this season if you don't say the same thing about him last season, if that makes sense.
I think there are other things that you can point to with regards to effort. I think that as a description, I think playing within himself is probably the best way to put it. I can think of a couple of incidents often in European football where you can see his body language is different in terms of how he takes bad results. For example, you've seen it a couple of times when we've failed in Europe, he's trudged straight off. He's been visibly disappointed, visibly despondent. I think about, it breaks my heart. It was one of the most heartbreaking images of that horrendous Copenhagen result when he scores the penalty and he's screaming at everyone to keep the head. And then, you know, fucking the most calamitous defending and they rip away potential European progression and he's devastated by it. And I just haven't seen, I've talked a little bit about it with Callum McGregor. I haven't seen Odson Edward wear any of this season on him. I just think that he looks, I think it was well reported or seemed to be reported at the start of the season that he didn't want to be here, or perhaps this was the season that he would move. There's all the stuff about, you know, he was injured for the Fenerbahce game and in and around that sort of time. And was that he didn't want to be here or he was unsettled, agent stuff, whatever. I don't think it was in his plans to be here this season. I don't think it was in our plans to keep him this season. And I think that he's maybe not necessarily started the season with the greatest of attitudes and then it's ended up where it's ended up. And on top of that, I think that's compounded by the malaise in the team. You talk about confidence, that's a big thing. There are times when I watch Odson Edward and it feels like he's just trying to play his own game because he's not. He's putting himself above the team. And I think of a couple of incidents like that, the kind of empty net where he tried to sort of flick the ball in a kind of quite fancy back heel way instead of just whatever it takes, get the ball in the net. And you talk about how frustrating his dribbling is, where he's always trying to like, I'm going to go past another player or I'm going to try and go past this player, instead of a more fundamental, like, I'm going to bring this player into the game because it will create a better chance. And that's, I think, one of the big differences that you've seen. It's a sort of selfishness. And I think that Odson Edward is always going to score goals because he's such a high ceiling player. But I think he has played within himself. I don't think he wants to be here. And it's going to be a really disappointing end to a player that, as you rightly say, could have been compared to Henrik Larsson as like our greatest ever striker.
To widen it out a bit from Eddie, I don't think it's too much of a leap to suggest that some people had been maybe promised earlier or been given, you know, assurances that they could have left before the start of this season, or that we might have brought some people in. I mean, I'm not saying that's the case, but I don't think it's too much a leap of faith to suggest that could have happened, and that could have fed into the thought process and the performances at the start of the season. You know, when you think about guys like this, you think about our, you know, most valuable assets. So even guys like Christy, you know, as whatever you think of Christy, you know, there was at one point we were saying, there's Stuart giving his opinion. At one point, people were saying, oh, we've not missed out on John McGinn now because Ryan Christie's performing so well. You know, that wasn't so long ago that we said that. So you get guys like Christy, you get guys like Eddie, you've got guys like and Cham even, Ayer as well. You know, Christian will know if Ayer thought he was going to be here this season or not. I'm sure he won't share it on air, but the point I'm making
is... Everyone just shook his head and he said, definitely, yes.
The point I'm making is, you know, that doesn't mean that they're not running out there and trying every week, you know, but that sort of discontent feeds through the squad, and that's maybe part of the apathy that we've seen in some of the team this season.
Is it right to expect more from those players, Osamani, when we're going through such a poor run of form and things like that? Do you think it's wrong to expect these guys to step up and really kind of change things themselves, these better players?
It's easy to say that, but then you had a manager who a number of junctures this season threw him under the bus.
Very early in the season.
So I'm Christopher Ayer, I'm Odson Edward, or I'm in Livy and Cham, and I'm looking at my manager saying, "You're a disgrace. This is all down to you." You know, it's hard. Yeah. It's sometimes hard to get that momentum back after that. So see, this thing about, you know, criticising the players, of course they deserve criticism, but the real crux of the issue has been the management of the club, and we shouldn't get away from that.
And I get your point, Louis, and you know, in a season like this, you want your big players to step up. I just don't. I guess my argument would be that the drop off in Eddie, considering the malaise around the team, I don't think the drop off Odson Edward specifically has done is more of a drop off than anybody else in the team. You know, the players we quote unquote know cares incredibly of this club. Scott Brown, shocking drop off. Callum McGregor, it's not been on the same level. Let's not even bring in Shane Duffy, who we know knows it, but he hasn't been able to perform in this team. So, and I think, you know, from Odson Edward, still the top scorer. Christopher Ayer is probably still the best player of the season. Even Ryan Christie, we might come on to, and he still has the third most goals of the season and the most assists. Samani knows I don't like assists, but he still has the most assists. So those players, yes, I don't think anybody can say they've been as good as last season, but I don't think they've dropped off more than the rest of the squad this season. So I don't really agree with the narrative that while some of them might not expect it to be here and nobody in the squad is in a good place, I don't think they've tried less this season. Now, the last five, six games, if some people's head is not in the right place, yeah, I'm not going to maybe disagree with that. But as we talked about before here, you know, the season has been a shit show, and this is just at the tail end of it.
Yeah, and I get that, and I think Somani was right to widen it away from just Eddie. My problem with it when it comes to Eddie is actually, it's not that I think that Eddie is the reason. You know, he's just no trying, he's lazy, and that's why we're in the position that we're in. That couldn't be further from the truth. And I love Eddie, and I want to see the best Edward, but it's that some people will not criticise him. That it's like, you can criticise, you can say whatever you want about Ryan Christie, because we all hate Ryan Christie, but people really love Eddie. So if anybody says anything against him or tries to say that he's in any way not trying, it's suddenly, oh, no, but you can't say that, it's Eddie. But, and that's what I don't like. Everybody should be allowed to be criticised. And the other thing is, we're criticising these guys as fans of the team. No one's getting personal about them. Okay, people might get personal about Christie, yeah, Stu, before you get in there.
Dislike him.
But it's not personal, but we will criticise. If I want to say that Eddie's shite, I'll say Eddie's shite, because that's my, you know, I can say that if I want. But this idea that certain players can be overly criticised and other ones can't, that doesn't sit well with me.
Just to comment, where I don't really agree with you, Lewis, is Odson Edward gets criticised a lot. You know, there's still people who, you know, especially in the media as well. And are some section of the fans maybe a bit overprotective of Eddie? Maybe. You know, I can't say they're being the objective arbiter of that, but I think it's because a lot of players feel Eddie is has to have unjustified criticism. And the kind of criticism that he gets, I'm not saying this is where you come from, Louis, but the kind of criticism that he gets in plays like Oliver Cham gets, is that it kind of feeds into a certain stereotype that is lazy and it is. So maybe some people are overprotective of Eddie. I'm happy with you saying Austin Edwards' performances are shite. I'm not happy, but I'm happy for you to say Christopher Yeh's performances are shite. But I don't really agree with a narrative. And again, I'm not putting this all in you, that these players are not trying. You know, that they're chucked, that they don't care. Because the argument I hold up against that is that players that you can undoubtedly say cares a lot about this club have absolutely shit seasons as well. So I think there's a lot of stuff going on there. Just on Ryan Christie, before Stuart comes in, I don't hate Ryan Christie. I think it's really frustrating, but I also really don't understand the personal vitriol against Ryan Christie.
I think that Ryan Christie symbolises individualism over the club, and I think that that's something that fans rally against. And that's what.
So I'm not jumping on it, but that's something I hear a lot. So could you give me an example? I'm not putting you on the spot and saying, you know, you're wrong, but I'd be interesting to have that discussion because I think it's in a way a morbidly fascinating one.
I'll give you an example. Late 1980s, Margaret Thatcher, there's no such thing as society. And she had the council house sell off, all about the individual, the rise of capitalism and greed. It's essentially what Stu's saying. Individualism over the collective, that is Ryan Christie. He's basically called Ryan Christie a Tory.
I think that there's a couple of things, whether they've been true or not, said in the press about him wanting away or wanting to move down south or not necessarily being committed to Celtic. I think that in his style of play, you see it as well, where his desire to score a wonder goal versus the better decision on the pitch is there to be seen as well. And I think that I find him an enormously frustrating player to watch. And I just do think maybe these things are intrinsic in the same way that I perceive Callum McGregor to be hurting, but I don't perceive Odson Edward and Ryan Christie to be hurting. I don't know where that comes from. And then, as Gal says, they had a Union Jack pillow in his flat in a picture.
But Stuart, I agree that he can be an incredibly frustrating player. And I absolutely agree with you. And on the shooting, again, his decision-making is absolutely woeful at times. But you could say this is a player that's been encouraged to shoot by the former manager in terms of if he's, you know, this is a guy who was grew up, a Celtic fan. His dad played for Celtic. And in terms of whether he wants to leave or not, what struck me there was the parallels with James Forrest. So in, summer 2016, the last end of Dyla's season, James Forrest is 25. And in February, he turns down a new contract offer, a contract that runs out in 2016. And Ronald Dyla says, essentially, Forrest has told us that he wishes to see what his other options are. He wants to know what else is there. And we gave him a good offer. So you just wondered that the parallels with Forrest and Christie, to me, are really striking because, Ben Rogers comes in at totally different managers. He persuades James Forrest to stay, and he's there. But James Forrest wanted away just as much as we think Ryan Christie wants away now, even though that's never been confirmed. So it's just those parallels. And he's an incredibly frustrating player, but I don't get where that vitriol comes from. If it's a Union Jack pillow, and if you're serious about it, I don't think Gal is serious about that, but I think
he probably is serious.
But I think, there's a lot of projections, a lot of projections about the feeling this frustration is being put on specifically Ryan Christie. And I'm not going to sit and defend some of his decision-making on the pitch and how he plays because they are incredibly frustrating, but I don't feel any ill will against the guy. I don't think he's any more culpable to this than all the other players.
His ill-discipline is, I think that really does draw you to it. You get drawn to him because he tries so many things that are against the odds. And, when you're thinking, let's just play a bit of football, keep it simple and try and score some goals, and you've got Ryan trying to kind of volley it in from 35 yards out, you know, that does play into it. But the point you made in Forest at that time is a good one, because I was going to say not everybody in this call, but again there, but everybody involved in the Cynic at that time, you could go back and listen, and there's not a single one who would have gave a shit if James Forrest had left at that time. And I think that leads us into a nice segue, even though we're probably finishing just now. It's vitally important who the manager is next season, in terms of not only these players maybe wanting to stay, but also fulfilling their potential and trying to reach their ceiling. Because frankly, you can make judgments on the players this season, but you can't, you're only properly going to judge them when they're being coached properly. It goes back to the point that I've made several times with you, Louis, and annoys you greatly.
We are going to sadly have to wrap up shortly. I do want to squeeze in one question from the Twitter box before we do, but just quickly on Eddie Howe, I think we all...
Who?
Exactly. We all hoped, probably, you know, we kind of kidded ourselves on again that something was going to happen today, and we're probably foolish for thinking it. But again, Tuesday's came, the social media blackout has ended that we're doing over the weekend, and there's still no announcements, still nothing. I mean, I did say in the reaction, I'd rather they kind of at this point let the stink of that game go, but I must say, today I was really kind of desperate to hear some news. And I think it's just going to rumble on. Stu?
I can't imagine a time when Celtic will ever have a manager. And I mean that honestly. That's how it feels at the moment. In the same way that I couldn't ever imagine a time when Neil Lennon wouldn't be the Celtic manager, when you felt you were stuck in some kind of torturous purgatory. And see, if you wake up every morning hoping for a tweet or a text or something, or every time you get a message you think that that's going to be the one, it's not, because that news is going to break about 9 o'clock on a Thursday night, and it's going to be Sun exclusive saying Celtic prepare to announce their man, and it will come the next day. So it's not going to be a sudden, or it's up to beat the stock market. You're going to hear about it before it happens, and who knows when that will be. I think that they're missing a real opportunity, because now there's literally no reason not to do it. If it's as signed and sealed as a lot of the speculation is, I actually take a little bit of solace in the fact that they haven't heard anything, because if it's not Eddie Howe signed, sealed, delivered, you would have to assume that they would have moved on, because it's gone for so long. I know, Christian, but you have to hope that if it's not a done deal or a sure thing, they cannot go back to square one when there's only, 12 weeks till Champions League football starts. So you have to assume that it's getting done. You then have the opportunity for him to come in. If they're encouraging fans, am I right in thinking that they're encouraging fans up to Celtic Park to see Scott Brown? I might be wrong on that. But
oh, fuck no. Please tell us that's not a thing.
Maybe that's not a thing. But you have Eddie Howe attend the last home game, and he only needs to come up and see the team once. It's a PR thing. It could turn from being a potentially very bad day where fans are, there's unrest because they still haven't heard anything, to a positive thing. And then the last game of the season is Easter Road, so jobs are good and doesn't matter. And not much has been asked of him. If they're talking about he's not coming in until June, that's only 3 or 4 weeks away. So he's in post very, very soon, and there's no need to not announce him if he is the guy.
So Manny, at all?
I've just got a vision of Eddie Howe leaving Celtic Park. You know, remember you used to do that thing where they had the boot of the car up, and if you could put the ball in the boot, you'd win the car. Eddie Howe, just punching the guy that's guarding that and driving out of Celtic Park after coming up for the last home game. It reminds me, I mean, you are right, it won't get announced when we think it's going to get announced. If you remember, Louis, we recorded that episode of the Weekly, which was out of date within about 40 minutes after us.
I was on it. I remember it well.
Were you on that, Stu? Completely forgot.
Wasn't my best night, but okay.
That's a good omen, mate. It might be, tonight might be the night.
Tonight could be the night. Been, you know, this.
An entire recording based on, you know, when's he going to leave? And then obviously he leaves. So yeah, it will happen when we least expect it. And now I'm boldly predicting it's going to happen tonight, because we've got the Vulture back on tonight. He's going to be the good luck charm. How in at 9 p.m.
Christian, you seemed a wee bit more sceptical. You don't think it's the done deal that everybody else does?
No, it was just a point Mr. Stu said, you know, if how if it looks like it's falling through, surely they got something else lined up. That's like, yeah, I don't think so. I'll be positively surprised if they do. You would hope so, Stu, that if, you know, if how is it? If it's not certain or if it hits a snag, you go, okay, well, if that doesn't happen, we got a couple of 2-3 feelers out. But I'm going to be the pessimist. And I think the gambling on Eddie Howe now. And if it's not, it's okay. It's John Kennedy until we've found somebody else in square one. So it doesn't even bear thinking about. That's what I said earlier as well, that I think my rage and my anger, if Howe isn't announced soon and it falls through and it's to kind of go, we'll take our time. It's going to come back very, 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 very quickly.
We have said that, you know, it can't get worse. It can't get worse. It can't get worse. This could be the ultimate it getting worse, where you have this humiliation of now like 6 weeks of thinking you've got your man and then you end up with Michael O'Neill.
Oh God.
Oh, you've wanted him for a while, to be fair. Right, listen, we're going to wrap up. You said about Lambert a couple of weeks ago. Talking your pish. Jack Ross and Paul Lambert.
Tone down the aggressiveness, Lee.
Sorry, did I swear there? Right, we're going to leave it there. I was going to go to a Twitter question, but we'll leave it for just now.
Ask it and I'll one-word it. We'll one-word it, come on.
Are we in a worse state than the Huns when Gerrard came in?
Yes.
Christian? No. Oh, no.
I think if everybody who
leaves... It's a one-word thing.
It's annoying you've just brought it up because that's a really good question.
Christian's never done a one-word answer in his life, have you?
First of all, I missed that. And second of all, to ask me to do a one-word answer, it's quite optimistic. If everybody who we think might leave this summer leaves, then yes, because the rebuild is ridiculous.
I'm going to say no. It was at Winston Bobag, which is a great name, that tweeted, he said he's needed 5 windows to build his team. I certainly hope we can get a team built in less than 5 windows, but it's maybe something that we'll come back to talk about. And the other thing that we'll need to come back and talk about next week, which will probably be our final weekly, I would imagine, of the season, obviously, is Scott Brown, because we didn't really touch on it. Obviously, his last kind of, possibly his last game, who knows. Anyway, we're going to wrap up there, leave it there. Chris Armani, you've been shite.
Here's buddy.
Stuart Duggan, you've been lazy.
Oh, I've just played within myself, mate.
Oh, you ruined my last one. Christian had played within himself.
Christian's played with himself.
At least I didn't duck any questions.
Nice. You definitely ducked. This has been the Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.